Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon or good morning, depending on the time zone you're in. Welcome to Blogger News Network on the radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another in our ongoing series, Surviving the 21st Century, a look at health and nutrition in our modern world, and it's not a pretty picture. As always, I'm joined by my good friends, the writing and research team of Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks. Good morning to you.
Well, good morning, Simon.
Good morning, Simon.
I have a little story for you both, and actually a question for you. How come we are running this radio program? I thought that the pair of you would have been out hobnobbing with the royals. William and Kate are in your neck of the woods.
Oh, Simon, today is the day the royals are going to South Los Angeles to visit underprivileged children. If this were a movie, they would be kidnapped, held for ransom by a gang, and no one would hear from them again. So we don't intend to join that procession. Sue, who lived in, our guest today, Sue McKinney, who lived in Los Angeles, will tell you, none of us volunteer to go to South Los Angeles, even with the royals. How about you, Ash? You want to go down there?
I'd like to go see the royals, but I don't really feel that safe going down there. I think I have to go rent worse than a wreck.
So I'm going to tell my morning story. Go ahead.
Let's finish the royals. The royals were in Calgary yesterday. Yesterday was the Stampede Parade. Ten days of drunken debauchery in Calgary.
Absolutely.
I couldn't resist calling Laura, my daughter, to see if they dropped by her house of pain to get themselves a quick piercing or a tattoo, and she assures me that they did not.
Well, all safe with the world.
You mean she didn't want a tattoo of a princess crown on her arm or something? I mean,
I was thinking more in terms of, you know, William might want one saying, "I love my grandma."
That's very nice, Simon.
My quick story was going to be about South Los Angeles. Early in our marriage, Ashley was doing some work at the Pats in the Playhouse acting. And so one day she gets on the 10 freeway from Santa Monica to the beach, and she calls me and says, "You know, honey, I just don't recognize where I'm going." I said, "Well, read to me the next freeway off-ramp." And she goes, "Gage," which I'm sure Sue is chuckling about, which is below the Los Angeles Coliseum and about two stops from being downtown Watts on a Friday night. And so I had to get her off the freeway, which terrified me. And she was driving, I think, your red Porsche. So here she is in the middle of the beginning of Watts on a red Porsche on a Friday night.
Hair blowing in the wind. You know, everything's safe. I'm going to go to the play, you know.
Trying to find an on-ramp back to Pasadena, and I'm sure Sue is laughing. So, you know, coming
well,
around
I am laughing, and
our guest today is Sue McKinney. She's a California attorney, businesswoman, writer, and speaker. And Sue's been leading a very interesting life, which we'll talk about a little later. She's been working in Vietnam for 17 years. She's the co-author of an upcoming book on traditional Vietnamese medicine called The Secret Herb of the King's Palace. She's a native Oakland, a lawyer by trade, practiced in Los Angeles over a period of time before she moved to Vietnam, and is now involved with the Ministry of Health of Vietnam, a variety of projects involving traditional Vietnamese medicine, and just a terrific businesswoman and lady. And Sue, we're going to come back to you in a moment or two, because Ashley first is going to let all the listeners know the latest recalls that the FDA doesn't publish, and they don't appear in your local newspaper on the television. Jump in, Ashley.
Well, actually, some of these are published at the FDA, and it's a hunt and find, as we've talked about in the past. I'm going to do some meat recalls first, and then I want to do some drug recalls, which I think are pretty significant. The ham recall was from South Carolina, which was 18,416 pounds of boneless, fully cooked diced ham product, which was on July 6th, and it was due to Listeria in the ham. So it's South Carolina company, 18,416 pounds of boneless ham. There was a halt done by the federal government on antibiotic misuse in veal in California on their veal products. So this is excessive levels of antibiotics and other drugs in the food at very low levels can cause severe adverse reactions among the general population, can harm who are sensitive to antibiotics, said the FDA. This is a low level. This is really kind of amazing since it's not really, you know, it's really in a lot of our products. But
yeah, a low level to them is not something I would treat lightly, would you?
They're saying even at a low level, man, it can cause severe adverse reactions, yet they're allowing the antibiotics to go into all our food, which is kind of a, it's really kind of weird. We're going to stop this veal from being produced at this California company, but at any rate, that's a whole different subject. We're going on with Hawaii firm recalls the convenience meals. 1,500 pounds of convenience meals were pulled from due to contaminants of Listeria. And there's several other products that were pulled, including a seafood company with La Fiesta Food Products, which had a warning. So they had a warning. And the Egyptian seeds were banned in Europe from coming in. So seeds and beans from Egyptian seeds and beans coming in from Europe were also on a pool level in Europe and should actually have been pulled here in the United States. The big deal right now are allergens are now claiming, as of the most recent report on the 8th, they say that of the 27 recalls that were done from meats for 2011, there were undeclared ingredients in the first 6 months of these recalls. So that's the reason they were recalled, and they're blaming it on allergens to cause the recall, not on bacteria on the recall. But then, of course, they go on, and the Dr. Elizabeth Hagen of the U.S. Department of Agriculture proceeded to say that there was a rise in particular importance because the medical doctors, as a parent, or her as a parent, has shown the number of children with allergies is on the rise. So they had 27 of the products they recalled. But then they listed things of the recall for 2011, which was Irish Hills, 900 pounds, Ford Depot, 25,500 pounds recalled meat, Bologna, 2,000 pounds of meat, American Food Service was 3,170 pounds. But then, of course, they don't mention anything about the turkey recall of 56,000 pounds, which I believe was last month, nor on this new recall, which is a substantial amount to me. But they're now blaming it on the allergens, and they're trying to calm people down, I think, by saying it's things that are put into the food that are undeclared that are causing allergies. It's the problem.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's a little bench for everyone to sort through. But the real purpose of it is to let everyone know that the government is not telling you what's in the problems in terms of recalls, and that you need to sit down and take a look every week and search for them and determine what you can eat and not eat. So we're going to switch over to...
I have drug recalls.
The drug recalls we'll do now next week, Thursday's show.
Okay.
And I want to run some statistics by Sue so she can talk about her product. The reason Sue's on the show is to discuss with us Krilla, an amazing new product that we've discovered that comes from Vietnam. A few friends of ours have tried it and found had just amazing results from it. And it really stems around the issue of male prostate and female health. And what we're going to do is give you some raw statistics so you understand why this is so important. In the U.S. today, there's an increasing concern about the environmental contaminants, not only affecting our food, causing health and other things, but the problems are pouring over to the reproductive health and fertility of men and women. Every 10 minutes, there are 12 hysterectomies performed in the U.S. More than 600,000 hysterectomies performed annually. Between 170,000 and 300,000 are due to uterine fibroids. Over $5 billion is spent annually on hysterectomies. And that's just the medical expense alone. The average time from work to recover from a hysterectomy is about 6 weeks, which is 18 million work days lost per year in the United States. 60% of all women undergoing hysterectomies have their ovaries removed. You know, it's just amazing. And then there's another $5 billion we spend on hormone replacement therapy annually, which is very dangerous, which Ashley will get into later, because those drugs are dangerous. 30% of all women undergo a hysterectomy by age 60.
For every 37% of women.
I'm sorry, 37% of women. For every 10,000 hysterectomies performed, 11 women die. Approximately 660 women die each year in the U.S. from complications from a hysterectomy. Possibly, as many as 80% of all women have uterine fibroids, while the majority have no symptoms. One in four end up with symptoms severe enough to have some type of treatment. And those numbers, I think, are just terrible in this country, including the ones that will hit Simon and I. Testicular cancer in men increased by 60% between 1973 and 2003 alone. And that's a terrible number for men. So, Sue, you have a wonderful product that addresses all of this. So tell us what it is and tell us a little about it.
Well, thank you, Manny. I'm familiar with your statistics, and I keep coming across these statistics again and again. I didn't happen to have a history of uterine fibroids in my family, so I didn't know much about it until I got involved with Krilla and started looking into it. And then as I discussed it with my women friends, I found out again and again that I had close friends who'd had to struggle with these problems.
Yeah,
so.
And this morning, Manny and I were talking about the same thing. I started listing some of the people I know who, at an early age in their 20s, had complete hysterectomies and ovaries removed, which is called castration, and they had their complete organs removed in their 20s because of fibroids.
Right. Something like 25% of white women in childbearing years have uterine fibroid tumors, 35% of Asian women, and 50% of black women. African American women are particularly at high risk for uterine fibroid tumors. And as Manny pointed out, many of them are asymptomatic. They don't suffer from the pain, bleeding, and other complications, but many do. And it can interfere with pregnancy. It can interfere with sex. It can interfere with just general wellness. And if the number one prescribed treatment for uterine fibroids in the U.S. is a hysterectomy, if you're 25 years old and you haven't had your family yet, that's not good news. When I was getting into this, I learned that my closest black girlfriend has had a history with uterine fibroids for many years, and she was reluctant and refused to get the hysterectomy because her closest friend did so at age 29, and unfortunately was one of Manny's statistics that died, that never left the hospital at age 29. Increasingly in the U.S., you can get a modified treatment or a laser treatment to remove fibroids, but they can grow back, and they'll tell you this. They'll reveal this ahead of time, that they can grow back.
Well, that's one of the reasons that they say you should just remove the whole carriage. You don't need it because, you know, well, you'll just keep getting the fibroids. That's one of the surgical solutions and the surgical pitch they do on patients, which I'm horrified with.
More and more gynecologists will counsel their patients to hang on to your uterus if you can, because there are a lot of other benefits and hormonal benefits from keeping your organs that we don't fully understand.
That's right.
Can I ask a really, really dumb question? I'm really good at dumb questions. I don't have a background in medicine, particularly not gynecology. What is a fibroid?
Go ahead, Sue. Sue?
Tell me what.
Nope, she's still on the line.
I'm here. Sorry.
Oh, good.
I don't know what happened.
Simon was just asking you what a fibroid was so that you could explain and then get into your, you know.
Absolutely.
No, and please do it in English.
I am not a doctor. I am not a medical professional. That's the only language I speak is layman's English.
Perfect. We'll get along
American
just fine.
At that. A uterine fibroid is a non-cancerous fibroid growth in the uterus. And they can be small and innocuous, or they can continue to grow. They can reach the size of a tennis ball, a grapefruit, a basketball. So they press on other organs as they grow and can cause pain and bleeding in the menstrual process. The good news is that they almost never turn into a malignant cancer. But it's still not something you want in your body.
Oh, absolutely.
But they still have no real significant, I mean, the cause itself, they don't really have a reason other than some people say it's a genetic thing, and that's all I understand for fibroids.
That's right. We don't really know. We can only look at the statistics and say that different racial groups may be at higher risk than others. And for most women, when they enter menopause and their hormones change, at that point, for many women, the fibroids subside and they start shrinking. So sometimes it solves itself naturally. But if you have an extreme condition prior to that, many women seek treatment. And
some people say that it's very painful, that if they have, like you're saying, some bleeding and pain with it, and this is the reason people actually go to seek treatment.
My closest black girlfriend that had so much trouble, she runs her own business. She doesn't miss a day's work because it costs her money, because she's it. And she told me that she loses 2 days a month because the pain and cramping and bleeding is so extreme.
Does she have an enlarged abdomen also from it? Because sometimes people get distension and enlarged abdomen from it.
Yes, exactly. And so we who are conscious of our figures have this additional challenge to face if you have uterine fibroids, because you can't get rid of that through exercise.
Right.
Oh.
So in Vietnam, under traditional medicine, and when in Asia, when we say traditional medicine, we mean the medicine of herbs and natural medicine. In the U.S., we tend to think of traditional medicine as allopathic medicine, as doctors. But in the Far East, it's exactly the reverse. Traditional medicine is the medicine that came through folklore and came through the ages.
And it's organic, right?
And it's organic, yes. Vietnam boasts 12,000 species of plants. It's comparable to the Amazon rainforest. And 3,000 of those species have been cataloged as having medicinal effect. They started a proper review of their medicinal plants back in the 14th century and continued throughout the ages. I mean, one of the trade goods that Vietnam was famous for in Southeast Asia, trading with China, was their medicinal herbs. People probably don't know that Vietnam, as before it was the country of Vietnam, it was three basic provinces, Tonkin, Annan, and Cochin, together with Laos and Cambodia, made up the five provinces that constituted French Indochina. And prior to that, it was the Vietnamese kings that ruled these various provinces. And for hundreds of years, they paid tribute to China. They were never fully invaded or controlled by China, but they paid tribute so as not to be invaded. And this worked more or less okay over the centuries. And the founder of Vietnamese traditional medicine, Dr. Thu Tin, in the 14th century, was so renowned and respected that the kings kidnapped him and gave him as tribute to the Emperor of China, where he was credited with saving the life of the Empress of China on two occasions. So
doing traditional medicine, correct?
Using traditional medicine.
Right.
Traditional medicine. Now, the translation in Vietnamese of the herb that is the basis for krilla, Crinum latifolium, has a couple of translations. One is the secret herb from the king's palace, and the other is the royal women's herb. And its traditional reputation was as an anti-tumor and natural product to promote the wellness of the reproductive organs of both men and women.
It has anti-inflammatory properties too, correct?
It has anti-inflammatory and antioxidant properties. And if you go to the website Krilla Health, CRILAHealth.com, you can read some of the research reports that have been done on krilla and crinum latifolium and download the original reports in their entirety to look at what's been studied about it.
This is a 20-year research that's actually been done, correct?
The foremost authority on crinum latifolium is a Vietnamese woman pharmacologist, Dr. Cham. And she has now studied it for 21 years. She was given a special grant, and a laboratory was built for her in Bulgaria at the Bulgarian Academy of Sciences to study Vietnamese traditional medicines. So she went back to Vietnam in the early 90s and was going through the country gathering 100 different herbs to go study. And she was in the area of Hue, where the old imperial capital, the old traditional seat of royalty of Vietnam. And she had stopped at a roadside stand to have a cup of tea and was talking to the little old lady that ran the tea stand and telling her what she was doing. And the little old lady said, "Well, I'm not a doctor, but the royal doctors here used to collect a secret herb, and this is what it was used for, and I can show it to you." So Dr. Cham was very intrigued and quickly focused on studying crinum latifolium. She learned that there were 12 subspecies of crinum latifolium, and after looking at them all very carefully, she determined that one of them had the correct medical efficacy. She took that one out of the wild 21 years ago and started propagating it on her organic plantations.
Because this is a plant, correct?
It's a plant. It's a member of the lily family. And it's not reported in the ancient traditional text because the royal doctors were not allowed to talk about it. We hear these stories of a couple of Chinese herbs also. If something was really rare, it was illegal for ordinary people to use it, and they kept it for the use of the royal family. It wasn't until the last Bao Dai, the last emperor of Vietnam, left for France in 1955, that the royal doctors started leaking word about crinum latifolium. And then people became very, very intrigued and very interested. So Dr. Cham started studying it, developed a manner of propagation and harvest and extraction to take the essential alkaloids and flavonoids out of the herb and encapsulate those and begin studying it first in the laboratory and then in clinical trials. So that in 2005, the Ministry of Health in Vietnam completed a clinical trial on men studying the effects of krilla for BPH. Now, BPH is the benign prostatic hyperplasia, the non-cancerous swelling of the prostate gland that affects most men by the time they're 60 and many younger men as well. This is the swelling of the prostate that presses against the bladder, making it difficult for men to empty their bladder and having to get up at night several times to urinate. So it's a big lifestyle disruption because they can't sleep through the night.
I'm interested. Simon, how many times have you said ouch in the last 2 minutes?
More times than I care to recall.
I find women are able to deal with these topics so much better than men, who tend to get sympathy pains for other men. And I think I'm one of them right now when I listen to the degree. And Sue, I know a slew of men that have had prostate cancer problems and surgery. The number is really very alarming.
Well, it is, and it's growing, and it's something that affects so many men, and it's just astonishing. As I've gotten into this, I find that remarkably, after a few minutes, men will open up and they will talk to you because they're thinking about it all the time and they're living with it.
Well, there's two
and
things,
more and more of them are looking for natural solutions to prostate wellness.
Yes, Ashley, you were going to jump in about something.
Well, I wanted to complete the thought you had on benign prostatic hyperplasia, because that is not cancer, as you're saying. This is benign, and that the two of the main symptoms people may find themselves with, as you started to say, was they may have frequency in the middle of the night, but there may be also be hesitancy, so they have trouble even starting the stream. So
that's right.
That they get up in the middle of the night, and it's the two things that they'll do here is they try to treat it with medication, which are anti-inflammatories, bring down the prostate, drugs with side effects, or they may, in some instances, even remove the prostate. And the prostate is something that's a very vital organ to you guys.
Well, that's right.
So go from there, Sue.
Well, and the side effects of these radical prostate treatments are impotence and incontinence. Now I feel Simon and Manny cringing again.
Yes,
so
absolutely.
If you could take a natural organic product to address this problem and avoid having your prostate reamed out, you might want to look into that, I would think.
I'm going to change the subject right now.
Run, Simon, run.
Right. Sue, you're obviously a very intelligent lady. Your background is in the legal world. Two questions for you. How did you end up in Vietnam? And how did you personally discover Krilla?
How I ended up in Vietnam is that, you're right, I have a background in law, and I was invited by a Thai client to go to Bangkok to do some business consulting in 1994. And as part of that, the Thai client was sending a delegation of a dozen Thai business people to Saigon for 3 or 4 days, and they invited me to go. I wasn't following Vietnam at that point. I didn't know if it was legal for me to go. And they said, yes, President Clinton had just dropped the embargo against Vietnam a couple of months earlier, and we could get me a visa to go to Vietnam at the Vietnamese embassy in Bangkok. Well, at that point, I raised my hand and said, I want to go. So I accompanied this Thai delegation, and it was fascinating. Even coming in from the airport in our minibus, there's 12 Thai faces and me, and people stared at us. They looked at my white face on that bus. There were almost no cars in Vietnam at that time. They followed the bus. They followed it in motorbikes, by bicycles, and one man jogged alongside until we stopped and I got out, and they rushed me. And I was a little unsettled, and they asked, where are you from? Where are you from? And I didn't know what to do, Manny. I fell back on the truth. So I said, I'm an American.
Oh, God forbid an American tell the truth
abroad. Well, I'm an American. And the fellow that had been running on side, he reached out to me. He didn't touch me, but he wanted to. And he reached out with both arms, and he said, are you coming back? And I thought, wow. And this is in the first hour of landing in Saigon. But it was like that. Over the course of the 3 or 4 days, the Thai business people said, this is far too interesting. We have to stay longer. So we ended up staying a week. I was being taken to meetings. One of the members of our Thai group was actually American Vietnamese, was married to the sister of the Thai organizers of this business delegation. So he was going back to visit uncles that he hadn't seen since 1975 when his side of the family fled when he was 10 years old. And these uncles turned out to be very interestingly placed businessmen. They were very uncomfortable with me, but their nephew was in the room to translate. And over time, they started asking questions. You know, why do people send us faxes? We need $12 million for a sugar refinery. We need $30 million for a hydropower plant. And after they were a little more comfortable, that great question. Now, AT&T, is that a big company? And I thought, this is fascinating. These people need some help. And we finished up our initial work in a week. And within 1 month, I found myself back in Vietnam. I just couldn't stay away. The people were astonishingly pro-American, and where can you say that? And that was another interesting thing. You know, I thought, why don't these people hate us? And as I finally got around to having enough Vietnamese friends to ask that question, two facts emerged. Number one, when America goes to war, 9 out of 10 people never see frontline action. They're building airstrips, pumping gas, running the PX, digging water wells. And these were the people that, the men and women, that most Vietnamese had contact with, and their experiences were extremely favorable. The second thing was the Vietnamese said, oh, you mean the American War? Of course, we call it the Vietnam War. They call it the American War. Oh, you mean the American War? Well, the American War was only 20 years. We fought the French for 150 and the Chinese for 1,000. We just wanted to do business with you.
Oh, how interesting.
So it was a fascinating thing. So as I went, I was able to spend several years in Vietnam without working for a big corporation, just on my own, soaking up information. And over time, I became involved either investing or counseling on investment in different kinds of businesses. And a friend of mine, who was back in the U.S. in his 70s having prostate problems, came across a reference to the raw herb, Crinum latifolium, and emailed me and said, Sue, do you think you could find this? And I said, well, yes, I live down the street from the Institute of Traditional Medicine. I know exactly where to go to look for that. And I sent my assistant in to look for it. Go buy this, and wrote it down. Well, he came back with a 2-kilo bag of tea. That's like the size of, you know, 3 loaves of bread. And I thought, oh, interesting, they're making a tea. And I wrote my friend. I said, well, it's a tea, and I know it's legal for me to bring tea back to the U.S. I can get you some of this. But my assistant didn't stop there. He was intrigued and went into the old traditional medicine pharmacies in the Chinatown part of Saigon. And one day he came back with 3 packaged products, a medicine, a dietary supplement, and a tea.
Wow.
And I picked it up, and I was reading the label. I said, now this is interesting. Someone is doing something. Look, they have a factory. Look, it's an extraction. Look, we started researching it and found out. And I said, get me an appointment with the director of this company, who turned out to be Dr. Cham, this Vietnamese pharmacologist. So I was able to start meeting with her about 2 weeks later, and I was the first American who had approached her. And my friend had said, well, you know, find out if you can get the American rights to this. Are they exporting? Do they want to export? Let's see if there's something to do here. So I went to meet Dr. Cham, and her son-in-law got his MBA at the University of Coventry in England. So he took over translation of the meeting, and that meant a couple of things. Number one, he spoke fluent English. Somebody she trusted spoke fluent English, but also, having an MBA from England, he had some idea of what it was going to take to do business with a foreigner, to do business with a Westerner. And as we got into it, I asked the question, are you exporting and do you want to? And they said, no, we're not exporting. Of course we want to, but we know we don't know how to do this. We know that dietary supplements in the U.S. and other countries are a very specific area. We've done a lot of research. We're confident about the safety and efficacy of our products, but we know it's viewed differently in other countries, and we need somebody like you to help us. So we started establishing this relationship. We, on our side, put together some investment because she was selling every scrap that she could produce right in Vietnam. As she became more and more famous and renowned in Vietnam, and people found that Krilla worked, so more and more people were taking it. And she needed help to expand the organic plantations and build a brand new factory. So American investors came over and looked at the plantations, met with her, were very impressed by her. She is a very serious, science first, business second.
I was impressed by the field, Sue. I couldn't get over how clean the fields were, how the workers over there are in white masks and masked to make sure that they're not putting their germs and bacteria onto the organic plants. The manner in which the video that you have on your site was extremely impressive on the growing of the organic plant.
It's all very carefully done. She is so strict. She won't even buy cow manure from cows that have eaten non-organic feed. She is so strict. And I recently took another American visitor there who was astonished at the flights of dragonflies we were seeing. She said, it's obvious there's no pesticides anywhere in the area because dragonflies are so sensitive and so susceptible. And Dr. Chom has instituted all of these procedures. And it raises a very important question that I know you've dealt with, and that is sourcing of organic raw materials anymore. This is becoming a huge problem in the American industry because even if you go buy 2 tons of chamomile, did you get the species of chamomile that you wanted to buy? And how do you know? And how do you know that it wasn't contaminated either negligently, unintentionally, or intentionally cut with something cheaper?
Well,
and the magic thing with Krilla is that it is all 100% vertically integrated. It is her fields, her farms, her factory, her extraction. There are no raw materials that are sourced elsewhere. No crinum latifolium is sourced elsewhere. And over the years, her harvesting techniques have brought the herb to its maximum benefit.
When somebody, right now the Krilla has gone into some of your hospitals and it's been approved for the hospitals in Vietnam, correct?
All hospitals and pharmacies in Vietnam are approved to carry Krilla, yes.
And the Krilla, when, let's say, for example, and I was looking through the abstracts, and I was very impressed by the scientific data that's up on your site. And I want to go back to antivirals later, but first I want to cover, when a person has a enlarged prostate, and they have this benign prostate problem, how long after they take the Krilla in the hospital, are they able to reduce this, or do they all eventually have to have surgery?
Well, in the clinical trial that they did, and I would say the results are mirrored in what we're finding commercially, 89% of the men received a good or very good benefit from taking Krilla. Now, natural products are not refined pharmaceuticals. They're not refined chemicals, so they're not as strong, and it can take far longer to feel the benefits in your body, and every body is different. Some men feel a positive benefit in as little as a couple of weeks. For some, it may take 2.5 months or longer. We just posted a comment from Ken Malik, who is the founder of the Prostate Awareness Foundation. I met Ken last spring and addressed his group in San Francisco in May. And Ken has been living with prostate cancer for 15 years. And he is very educated on the topic and has an international group of people that follow. And he incorporates lifestyle, exercise, diet, all the things that we know are important. But Ken was finding after 15 years of prostate cancer that he couldn't sleep more than 3 hours a night because he had to get up to urinate. After 2.5 months on Krilla, he wrote me and said, more than half the time now I'm sleeping through the night, and the rest of the time I get up once. And the only change, the only thing I can attribute this to is Krilla. Now that he's been on it more than 3 months, and we recommend what we call a load phase. You want it to build up in your system for at least 3 months, maybe a bit longer. Now he's been able to cut back to 2 capsules a day, 1,000 milligrams a day, and that is maintaining this new level of prostate wellness. So
it's brought the inflammation down in the prostate.
It's allowing him to sleep through the night.
Right.
More
well,
than
that would
the
that
time.
Would be the conclusion for me on my end. That would be my conclusion that it because of the anti-inflammatory property, if it reduces, it's going to reduce the pressure for him on the areas that
exactly.
make have frequency throughout the night.
Right.
I'm going to be the commercial weasel here. How did you manage to get an import license? I mean, was it a tough battle?
Well, Krilla as a dietary supplement, if they've been used in commerce prior to a certain date, you're allowed to use them. Now, and we went to lawyers and said, because I'm not this kind of a lawyer. So we got legal opinions on what we could do, and we were told that this was okay. So
yeah,
the FDA has the right to come back if they want to and ask you to demonstrate safety, and we're confident with the 21 years of lab and clinical trial research, should they ask, we can demonstrate the safety of Krilla.
You know, Sue, what generally happens, because we've observed this with red yeast rice, which I'm not sure is a remedy, and in Vietnam, but is probably the best Chinese remedy available for high blood pressure.
Or cholesterol, you mean.
Yeah, or cholesterol, excuse me. And basically speaking, it depends on what kind of a forces come from the industry and the lobbying that comes from it. If you're a threat to them, sooner or later you're going to hear from the FDA, and if you're not a threat to them, they don't care. But usually the FDA itself does not make any jump into this particular area. So it's a strange and sad problem in our country that the industry drives the criticism and not something else.
Well, I've heard since I've gotten involved in this, I've been cautioned by many, many people that the FDA is not your friend. But I have to say, the FDA has been extremely responsive. I've met officials from the FDA at various conferences. I've called and written them with several questions. They've been immediately responding either by telephone or email with information. And so far, it's been a positive experience. They've been very helpful.
Well, good. As I said, the problem doesn't come from the rank and file of the FDA. It comes from the companies that more or less push the FDA to advance whatever reasons are
right.
Their position, and strange enough, if you do have any problems historically, that's where the problem comes from. And the other one too is life is very simple with the pharmaceutical business. If your product's selling better than theirs, then you could have a problem with them. Isn't that a strange way to judge a product?
Well, these markets are so huge. The BPH market in the U.S. alone is about $2 billion. And as you mentioned, the menopause market is also huge. We're careful not to make medical claims. There's a lot that we don't know, and we're very interested to help support more research on krill. What can it do? What can't it do? The number one herb out there now for prostate is saw palmetto, and that's a very large industry. But the medical research seems to be divided, evenly divided, about whether it works or not. And even if it doesn't work for you, the placebo effect can be up to 30%. So even if it doesn't work for you, it can work for you. And
yeah.
There's a recent study out. I'm sorry I don't have the citation. I just learned about it a couple of days ago, about a study about placebos, that even if you know you're taking the placebo, that it can have a beneficial effect on you. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah, it is.
That is fascinating. Mind over matter.
Right. Well, we're careful. We're careful to say that, you know, we're selling an herbal supplement that we believe can promote, support, and maintain prostate, uterine, and menopausal health. And that's really all that we know. We're anxious to do more research.
Yeah.
I think right now, Manny and I are playing a game of chicken as to which one of us is going to broach the subject first. All right, it seems to me that whenever a good natural product is found, the first thing that happens is Big Pharma goes, oh, we can't have this. I mean, people will be growing it. Yeah, that isn't good for us. We've got to make an unnatural version in the laboratory. You know, at what point does Big Pharma... Big Pharma step in and go, oh, they might be onto something?
You raised two things. In my very first meeting with Dr. Chom, she told me that she'd been approached by a very large French pharmaceutical company. You would know the name. And she says, they've approached me about helping me with Krilla. What do you think about that? And I said, well, in the U.S., we would call that company Big Pharma. And in the U.S., we don't trust Big Pharma, because I promise you, they could pay you far more in a license fee than I ever could. But they may or may not bring your product to market, because they will have a pharmaceutical product that for the prostate that Krilla would compete with. And unbeknownst to me, that was her secret fear. I'm fortunate to be dealing with a pure scientist whose goal and objective is, number one, to make Krilla the best it can be and get it out there to the public. And they can come and offer her millions of dollars, and it's not enough. It's not her primary objective.
She has a long family history in the documents that you have on your site that I was very impressed with. And I got that heart from her, how it's been passed down from five generations medical doctors and
scholars and academicians, intelligentsia, and traditional doctors. Her
very
respected,
honorable family.
Very honorable family. Money is not the number one thing. And these are some wonderful people to be doing business with. Her grandfather discovered a cure for snake bite by walking out one day and seeing the poisonous snake go and catch the rat and bite the rat. And the rat should have died. But some people came along and startled the snake. The snake ran one way. The rat ran the other way. And the grandfather watched the rat go over to the next series of rice paddy dikes and go to these wild grasses and start chewing these wild grasses, eating the grasses, and stuffing them into his wound. And he lived. So the grandfather said, I have to study this wild grass, and made a remedy out of that. Dr. Chom's father was dual PhDs and had told her from a young age, when the French were controlling Vietnam, they were shutting down the traditional medicine universities and trying to suppress the natural remedies and bring in foreign pharmaceuticals. But they were so expensive. And Dr. Chom's father told her from a young age, why should we have to use expensive, imported foreign medicine when we have a wealth of natural medicinal herbs in Vietnam? You should devote your life to that study. And so she did. And Simon, you raised a second point about a pharmaceutical company trying to copy Krilla or trying to replicate it. Number one, Dr. Chom says, let them try. She says, it's not that easy. And number two, if they did that, then you have a pharmaceutical, and that's a drug, and you have to go through all the clinical trials to get FDA approval. And you never know if that synthetic crinum latifolium is going to react with the body in the same way that the natural substance does.
That's the biggest problem they have right now with drugs in this country.
Manny, you must be just, you know, chomping at the bit on that one.
No,
I mean, isn't that the way Big Pharma works? We'll patent it.
They'll patent a copy of it. That's the story of statin drugs, as we put in our books, that statin drugs basically are nothing more than a chemical version of red-yeast rice. And, you know, you can just take the natural herb, which is far more effective than the Crestor and all the rest of different drugs.
Lipitor.
And in fact, I'll tell you a story. Back in the 90s, you know, basically red yeast rice was used by a minimum number of people. Well, the word sort of got out and everybody started using it. And so statin drugs came along. And how did they come along? They came along because the pharmaceutical companies went to China, wanted to know why the Chinese had such a low amount of heart disease. When they found out
cholesterol, heart disease, caused by cholesterol, that
they decided that it came from red yeast rice, and rather than import it because it's a natural herb, they can't patent it, what they did is they brought it back and created the synthetic. Well, word got out, and red yeast rice started to sell very, very well. Well, all of a sudden, now they had a competitor. And so what they did is they've got a variety of states to make it illegal to use red yeast rice and tried to have it banned. And they actually had it banned for a period of time, but a variety of health groups took it to court and won a court decision that prevented them from banning it, or else they would have been successful in stopping that too. So, yes, they will do this, and, yes, they will try, and that's been their MO over a long period of time, and it probably won't change, yes, Ashley.
Well, but, Manny, you and Ashley and Simon are part of the solution, because what is happening now, and I'll throw some statistics at you from the Natural Marketing Institute, what's happening now with both the difficulty in access to health care in America and the expense in access to health care in America is that people are taking more and more responsibility for their own health and their own wellness. Sales of natural products are going up $100 million a year, even in the recessionary economies, because people are trying to maintain wellness. Nearly 22% of Americans now are taking herbal supplements, and that amounts to over 20 million men a year are purchasing herbal supplements that are specifically targeted to prostate wellness. Over 12 million women a year are purchasing herbal products that are specifically targeted at menopausal wellness. So people are educating themselves because of radio programs like yours, because of books like Manny and Ashley's, and Dr. Google. Dr. Google is an incredible source of information. You can't hide the puppy anymore. It's
you
out
can't.
There.
You absolutely can't.
Well,
and
you know, I describe it as the modern-day version of the Gutenberg Press, that's what opened up the world centuries ago to other ideas that could no longer be hidden by the Catholic Church, who was responsible for copying all the manuscripts. And that's what's happening now. The Internet is allowing choices, and much better choices than Americans have had for a long time. And by the way, the in furtherance of those stats, organic foods are now the fast-growing, and medicines and supplements are the fastest-growing segment of the American economy.
Wow.
Unfortunately, though, Sue, what's happening with women is, and I consistently hear this when I speak to women, about what they're taking for their hormonal balance, and they're running over to the store and listening to these ghostwriting publicity. And I say it's ghostwriting publicity because anything dealing with soy in this country deals with the USDA and deals with the, you know, go take soy, you're going to get better. Well, soy is an endocrine disruptor. So you have this endocrine disruptor that may be causing the problem to begin with. And so instead of making people well, they're actually getting worse.
Sicker.
They can have worse problems. And so for your product is an organic product. Been researched for over 20 years, as you're saying, 22 years, right? 21, 22 years. So, and it's had a long history prior to that because it's been used in other countries. So I feel actually a little safer with Corilla than I would with a soy product that I know is just strictly about how many stocks am I going to sell today on the New York Stock Exchange.
Right.
And I want to object. Sue, you accused us of being part of the solution. Now, I'm pretty certain if you talk to Big Pharma and Big Food, we are, in fact, part of the problem.
Well, I'm flattered to have accused you of being part of the solution. Thank you.
She got you, Simon. Yes, and I agree with you. And for every person that we convince to look at this differently is improving the lot of America. And Simon will tell you that more people are calling us for counsel in regards to what to do because they can't get answers in the mainstream media, that we're finding that it's just opening up many, many new doors. And you're right. I think that together, your efforts, our efforts, and everyone else's are going to, sooner or later, I think, turn the tide of battle.
Well, I'd like to talk about two of the Don Quixotes that are charging the windmills. And Manny and Ashley, you're one of them. I've been reading your copy of It's Not Your Fault. And when I met with you in L.A. a couple of months ago, as I was leaving, Ashley told me, now be careful what foods you're buying because you're used to living in Vietnam with fresh organic products. And everything in the U.S. is poisoned. Well, I may be exaggerating, Ashley. But that night I wanted to go have a canned soup product that I grew up on. And Ashley's quote as I was walking out the door of their house was in my head. And I read the label. And darn it, if there wasn't high fructose corn syrup in my favorite canned soup. And I thought, that wasn't there when I was a kid. And I put it down, and I went and bought the organic one. So things are changing.
And you didn't get sick that last trip, right?
I did not get sick. The second windmill charger I'd like to mention, any man I care about, I have recommended to pick up a copy of a book called Invasion of the Prostate Snatchers. Now, this was written by a patient, Ralph Blum, and his prostate oncologist, Mark Scholes, who is the director of the Prostate Cancer Research Institute in Los Angeles. And you would think that most men with prostate cancer would be going to a prostate oncologist, but it turns out there's fewer than 100 of people with that specialty in the United States. Most men with prostate problems are seen by their urologist. And I didn't realize that urologists are, by training, surgeons.
That's right.
And as Dr. Scholes said, why would you go to a surgeon for an opinion as to whether or not you should get surgery? This is akin to thinking the used car salesman really is your friend. And this book just sets forth the treatments, the options, the different conditions in English, as you say, Simon, in a very readable, coherent fashion. And I understood a number of things that I hadn't understood before. For instance, there are three distinct levels of prostate cancer. For two out of the three, most men are entirely okay adapting a watchful waiting and not rushing in to get biopsies and radical prostatectomies. And I would urge anyone to pick up a copy of the book and consult on what with your medical professionals on what your alternatives are, because there are a lot of alternatives out there.
I think there's a rush, too much of a rush in our country to do surgery. And one of the reasons is the economics, as you know, Sue, that's one of the few areas in which doctors get paid consistently good amounts of money from Medicaid, Medicare, et cetera. So if they don't do surgeries, they basically lose money. And that's a sad commentary in our society. Go ahead, Ash.
Well, you know, just the fact that every 10 minutes, while we were talking, every 10 minutes, 12 hysterectomies are performed in the United States. They were performed in the United States every 10 minutes. 12 hysterectomies.
Okay, I want to jump in just for a second. Sue, you brought up an interesting point about, you know, a urologist is a surgeon. There are only 100 prostate specialists. Here's the real issue, and I'm going to recant a conversation I had with my wife. She wants to go to a doctor, but she doesn't know what kind of doctor to go to. She wants to go to a doctor that can talk to her sensibly. And, what's happened to our doctors that suddenly they're all specialists? You know, we have a bunion specialist, we have an ingrowing toenail specialist. What would happen to the good old general practitioner?
He's not getting paid, Simon. The way the pay is distributed among doctors right now, someone who is primarily GP gets the lowest office visit, the lowest treatment visit, and it's virtually impossible for them to survive. Also, hospitals generally only hire people with graduate specialty degrees to work among the largest hospitals in the country requires you to expand your education. Some of this, in my opinion, is done to enrich the medical schools who make more money from postgraduate work than they do from undergraduate work. So, and in many respects, the medical delivery system, which, as you know, I've written a number of blogs about with Ashley, about how it's basically run by the drug companies. So we publish all these articles about how Harvard has been bribed to death by the drug manufacturers to prescribe statin drugs, to get, for example, psychedelic drugs for children approved for delivery. I mean, when you look at the long list of things that are going on, you can see the hand of industry in it. So what's happened is, as I pointed out in one of the books, that basically corporations have taken over the wagon called medicine, and they're making all the decisions, and somehow or another, by having specialists, more surgeons, and other things, they're selling more high-end medicine. And it's not an accident. It's part of a marketing plan devised by the large corporations, big pharma, et cetera. And that's why I say to Sue that you're fine until you cross their gun sight, and the minute you do, then suddenly you're just like everybody else and you're a target. So anyone who interferes with their philosophies and their position vis-a-vis delivering medicine and making money is in danger in our country.
Well, I've been living out of the U.S. for the last 17 years, so I can't speak responsibly about access to health care in this country in the research, I've read that doctors in the U.S. going to medical school receive about a half a day training on nutrition.
That's right.
That's changing slowly. I read that UCSF now offers a two-week course on natural medicine as an elective in the fourth year. Doctors like Andrew Weil are offering postgraduate courses in Vietnam to become a doctor of traditional medicine. You have to complete standard medical school first and then have an additional year of study on traditional medicine. So they are the most highly qualified doctors in the country.
Did I just hear that right? Half a day on nutrition. It takes, what, 7 years to become a
Because our medical
doctor?
Schools are not focused on wellness, as you have all pointed out. They're focused on specialty treatment, not avoiding the problem in the first place,
Simon,
which is what Asian traditional
diamond?
Medicine is about, avoiding the problem in the first place.
I found that same thing, Sue, with treatment. When I was in treatment in Germany, the whole thing was about traditional medicine was about the immune response, improving your own immune response to overcome what was happening with you. And they had specifics that worked on the organs to heal your body and allow your body to heal itself. Which is exactly what you're saying, I think, not exact, but, you know, within that realm of talking with the Vietnamese type of traditional medicine.
So, Simon, did I hear your favorite Andrew Weil mentioned?
I was trying to go buy it.
did I just open the trap door?
Oh, you
well,
did.
A little bit. Andrew Weil is somewhat of a shill for the major drug companies. He pushes his own soy nuts and other products.
GMO soy nuts or,
genetically,
you know,
modified foods. And actually had the temerity to attack us once about soy, at which time Simon took him on, and we haven't heard from him since, because the bottom line is almost every decision he makes is based upon how much he can sell and who he can sell to. And that's a sad commentary about medicine, too, is that doctors, in many respects, have to literally create ancillary profits from selling, drugs, or whatever it is they're selling, because they can't make money in a standard practice of medicine. And again,
I wasn't going to bring up the Andrew Weil thing.
Did you hear me try to talk past it? I tried to get over it, past it. I went on, Simon.
Yeah.
I was gone. I was a car in the next room.
I met Dr. Andrew Weil only very briefly, but he opened other doors for me. Dr. Tirona Lodog, who is an American Indian who was a midwife and went to medical school and now is one of the top lecturers around the country on women's health through natural products. And together, they do a lot of promotion for research and more consideration in these areas. So that's my I'll end my comment there.
Oh well, that's a good thing. That's a good thing to hear, though, Sue. That really is.
I didn't say that Dr. Weil doesn't do good things. I'm just saying that beneath all of that press that he gets, he does a lot of things that go unnoticed that are not good for our society, and that have enriched him. For example, he has a promotional deal that essentially pays the University of Arizona back for his teaching. So he doesn't even cost the university any money, and he uses them as somewhat of a front to sell his various goods. And more power to him. He's a good businessman. I don't take that away from him. But I am disturbed by the fact that he pushes basically GMO foods, which we think are too dangerous in our society. So,
well, soy in particular.
I'm sorry. And let's get back to something, because time is starting to run on us a little bit, Sue. You need to give us your websites again, how people can get this information, and whatever else you'd like to tell us right now.
Okay, well, the website is Krilla Health, CRILAHealth.com. When we went looking for domains, we couldn't get Krilla.com because it's a French rock and roll group.
Oh, dude.
That was unexpected. So, but we're delighted to be Krilla Health, because that's what we do. You can see the research and comments about Krilla for prostate is one product, Krilla for menopause, and Krilla uterine health. There was actually a clinical trial done in Vietnam on using Krilla for uterine fibroid tumors. You can go to the website and see the results of that. The study was only 90 days. They're very aware that that's not long enough for conclusive results, but it's all the money that they had at the time. So at the end of 90 days, 30% of the tumors had stopped growing, 50% were shrinking, and 20% continued to grow at a slow rate. Those are still very positive benefits.
Very positive.
I'd love to be able to go back and trace all of those women. I'm very pleased that we're receiving good interest from a number of American doctors and researchers who are now willing to go meet with the Ministry of Health in Vietnam to design clinical trials to international standards, including double-blind, placebo-controlled. We will be starting our first very small clinical trial in the U.S. later this month with a very well-known American researcher, Dr. Tori Hudson, up in Portland, Oregon, and look forward to reporting more results with you another time.
Okay, I have to, again, interject just for a second. Manny and Ashley, this is completely different from Monsanto. Oh, thou shalt not touch our products. You know, you can't do an independent study, but what I'm hearing from Sue McKinney is, sure, come on down. You know, we're more than happy to open our product up to independent research.
Oh, it sounds like it's day and night.
There's no secrets anymore. There's no secrets anymore. Krilla is not a panacea. It's not going to cure anything or everything. It's beneficial. Dr. Chom wants to know what it can do, what it can't do. It's about the science.
You know, one of the science things that I wanted to have, and I'll do this quickly because I know we're running over, and is Sue, is one of the things I keep going back to is that, and there was a tie-in for me, if you can hold on for like just a minute. The tie-in was that it was an antiviral. Then I look at the cervical studies from the CDC, and they're saying that that the virus is the human, as we all keep hearing about, the human papillomavirus is the main cause of cervical cancer. It's a virus. The virus is passed from the male to the female, which means that there could be cancer caused by the man can have the cancer. If they're passing that, then they must carry it, and that must be part of their cancer. Now, if this Krilla, if I understand this correctly, the Krilla may be an antiviral, which means if it's an antiviral, it may actually help to be an anti-cancer.
Ashley, I'm just not qualified at your level to respond to that. I don't
know. Ask her when you go back, because I keep going over this and over it, and it's one something that I just go, you know, this may be the solution, because if it has antiviral qualities to it, and they're saying this is what's causing the cervical cancer, which is in large numbers in the state, by this HPV, which is a virus, that would actually make logical sense to me with a Krilla. And that would be a question that I would love to hear an answer back from her.
It sounds like a topic for another research study.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, what's really interesting, if it is an antiviral, because that's what the studies show, when they do GMO, because we have to do something GMO or the show just doesn't work for me, Simon. When they do GMO, they had a major doctor who is a Dr. Susan Bardotzis. And I may be...
It's Bardot.
I just destroyed her name. They have cross-species viruses that cause the disease continually, and GMO is what they find. They have new bacteria that cause disease. They have new resistance that cause the disease. And it's causing random insertion of these gene cells causing harmful cancer, and it all goes back to viruses. which means that, first of all, if you cut out the GMO, we may eliminate this virus completely, but you may also be part of the solution with what's happening in this country, and I'd love to hear an answer with us when you go back.
I will be happy to ask.
That would be great, Sue. Now I can sleep.
And so can I. So it's been terrific. Would like to have you come back in a month or two and tell us what your progress is, and we'll have new listeners who haven't heard what you have to say, and they'll give them an opportunity to learn a little bit more about why Krilla could be very, very valuable to their health. And I want to thank you for taking this time, because I think your message is so very important to people in America. We need to look for other alternatives. We need to look for other solutions.
Organic ones.
And organic ones, ones that don't threaten the health of our nation. And I think this is a wonderful place to start. And, again, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. Thanks,
thank
Simon,
you
Ashley, Maddie.
Thank you for caring about people so much that you've taken a large amount of your time and your life to take the responsibility of getting this product out to women and out to men who need it. Thank you for that, Sue.
My pleasure.
This is Simon Barrett for Blogger News Network, wishing everyone a happy and safe week. And I really want to thank my panel, Manny Barling and Ashley Brooks, and our very special guest, Sue McKinney. And Sue, yes, please do come back and let us know where you where you head with Krilla. Looking forward to it. Till next time, goodbye.